This is the Bulls Talk Podcast. I'm Rob Schaefer, joined today by my NBC Sports Chicago teammates, Casey Johnson and Kendall Gill. Coming up on the show, KC, Kendall, and I react to the news that Lonzo Ball will undergo knee surgery and miss approximately 6 to 8 weeks, break down the play of Ayo Dosunmu and Kobe White, and hit on a few Bulls trade deadline topics, including a potential pursuit of Jeremy Grant and what it would cost.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
All right, welcome in to the Bulls Talk Podcast. I'm Rob Schaefer. Today, I think I'm going to play more of a Josh Giddey role for this episode. I'm going to get my 10 assists. I'm going to get my 10 rebounds, but I'm going to leave the scoring to my colleagues here with Casey Johnson, as always, who needs no introduction for his work on our site for many years on the Bulls beat and on these airwaves. And today, for the first time in a long time, Kendall Gill joins the program. Kendall, sneakily before we started recording, might have beef with us because it's been so long since he's been on the show, but we're thrilled to have him today. KG, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, man. I mean, you guys have had everybody on this podcast but me. But hey, listen, better late than never. I appreciate you guys having me on. You know, I love talking Bulls and hanging out and talking with you guys. So I appreciate it. A million thank yous.
Well, a million thank yous back. We're thrilled to have you. Unfortunately, we have to start this episode on a little bit of a somber note. It's been such an unbelievably, you know, amazing start to the season, basically through the halfway point for the Bulls. But there's been a little bit of rotten injury luck recently. And, you know, the most recent was today. The Bulls announced Lonzo Ball is going to undergo arthroscopic surgery on his left knee. It's going to hold him out 6 to 8 weeks. That came after a morning of reports that he had been diagnosed with a slight, small tear in his left meniscus. That's an injury that Lonzo has a little bit of a history with. He's had surgery in that area on that type of injury back in 2018 when he was with the Lakers. This has been kind of a nebulous few days with Lonzo. It started as knee soreness. It was a bone contusion. Then it was a meniscus. Now he's having surgery, and he's out of it for a little while here. Casey, let's start with you because you did some reporting on this morning. What do listeners need to know about the Lonzo Ball situation as of right now?
Well, I mean, you've laid it out. I mean, it's the timeline is what it is. They say 6 to 8 weeks. Teams typically go conservative with their estimates, so not to make the athlete look bad. So, you know, maybe it's 5 to 6 weeks. I don't know. Maybe it's the full 8 weeks. Either way, him doing this now gets him back in time for, you know, several regular season games before what you hope to, if you're a Bulls fan, to be a long playoff run. So from a team standpoint, it makes a lot of sense for him to get this done now, especially if it's been bothering him for a while. And as you mentioned, the previous history he has with it. And I know we're going to get into Ayo and Kobe later, but, you know, I don't, you know, Ball's making a decision that's best for him and the team. So it's separate from this, but the fact Kobe and Ayo are playing at the level they are certainly provides some depth for you at that position.
Yeah. Like you said, Casey, that timeline establishes a window between March 3rd and March 17th. If it is 6 to 8 weeks that he ends up being out, if he can fully recover, he could be back in that window. That's 20 to 25 games missed, 26 games missed, and he could come back with 15 to 20 games left in the regular season. So provided it leads to a full recovery, you're right. It does give a little bit of a ramp up before the playoffs. So that's one silver lining. KG, what was your first reaction when you heard the Lonzo news? It's been building for a couple days, but to get that final knell today.
Disappointment, but you know, that's part of the business that we're in. You know, that's why it's so hard to win an NBA championship because, you know, you got to stay healthy. Everything has to go right. And, you know, it seems like the Bulls have had buzzard luck this year with one injuries and two COVID protocols. And such an important player Lonzo is to this team. That's why it's a disappointment. I mean, he just got back from COVID protocol, and I thought that he was playing really well, but you know, unfortunately, this is something else that we have to deal with. But the good thing is that we have two guys who we're going to talk about later in Kobe White and Ayo Dosunmu that can, I believe, fill in admirably for him. So that's the silver lining in all of this.
Yeah. And I want to say one thing, Rob. I will say on a personal level, and obviously our job as reporters is to be as objective as possible, but I will say on a personal level, I'm going to miss watching Lonzo play, man. I love watching that guy play basketball. He has got such a high basketball IQ. The way he pushes pace, he makes so many smart anticipatory plays. He's just such a fantastic connecting piece. He's one of those guys you kind of admire when you see him once or twice a year, you know, in the West in person. And then when you see him on a nightly basis in person, you're like, wow, this guy's really good. And I just enjoy his style of basketball. So on a personal level, I'm bummed that I don't get to watch him play. And I mean, I know that's being selfish. His health is obviously the most important thing, but hopefully a speedy recovery and full recovery for Lonzo Ball.
And also what he did defensively, like him and Caruso set the tone for the Bulls defensively at the point of attack. And, you know, obviously now it's Io and Kobe, and they've been doing, you know, a pretty, you know, decent job. But I thought for sure Lonzo and Caruso were going to be on an all defensive team this year if they stayed healthy. And now, I mean, now that might be a little bit in jeopardy because of injuries and COVID and stuff like that. But along with what he was doing and bringing offensively, defensively, I think is where it's going to hurt a little bit, you know, the most because now they, you know, they don't have a, you know, a lockdown defender at that point of attack right there at the pick and roll. But defensively, I think is what they're going to miss most too.
And that's been on such a downturn, the defensive end, over the last few weeks. And it was kind of this, at least from the outside, the Bulls don't think this way, but from the outside it was, all right, well, when they get Lonzo and Caruso back, you know, they're two anchors, even though they're perimeter players, you know, that can lead them to start taking steps back in the right direction to where they were earlier in the season defensively. That's going to get delayed for a little bit. And, you know, Lonzo, I mean, like you said, Tony, offensively, 13 points a game is a career high. 42% from three is a career high. He's taken them on, you know, a very high volume. His playmaking really juices them in transition. So it's going to be a tough one to weather. But let's pivot immediately to Kendall, something that you referenced there, which is how the Bulls are going to, you know, you can't replace Lonzo Ball and to a lesser extent Zach LaVine for as long as he's out. But right. The two guys that have filled in the starting backcourt, Ayo Dosunmu and Kobe White, have done a pretty admirable job lately, especially in these three games since they've actually been in the starting lineup, those two in tandem. I don't know that there is a more foremost expert on Ayo Dosunmu than you, at least that I know, Kendall. So for him specifically, what have you seen lately that has impressed you? He's been such a revelation at every phase of his rookie season, but now with more minutes, more opportunity as a playmaker, with you know, tougher defensive assignments, he's even ascended to another level. What has impressed you most about what he's been able to do lately?
What impressed me most is that he's been able to get back to the player he was at Illinois. And, you know, they had him playing off of the ball a lot, specifically in summer league when he first started off. And, you know, let's not forget, he didn't really look too impressive in summer league. And then, you know, he comes here to training camp. Lonzo is the point guard. He has to play off the basketball. That's not his natural position. So now that he's over these past four or five games that he's exploded, he's just, to me, he's just the same guy he was at Illinois. He's just doing it at the pro level. And he has the basketball in his hands. You notice another thing is that when he and Kobe are in the game at the same time, he's basically the primary ball handler. You know, and Kobe is playing off of the ball, which I believe he did do. And, you know, I love the way that Ayo is not, like, he doesn't play like a rookie. You know, he plays, to me, he plays like a season, like, 3 or 4 year vet. You saw him yesterday against the Cleveland Cavaliers where he could have taken the jump shot, but what he did, he drove. He knew Vucevic was struggling, so he had to drive to the basket. Gave him a couple nice bounce passes. That actually, in my opinion, really started to get Vuce going offensively because he started getting baskets close to the rim. And a big reason for that is because of Ayo. Also, you guys notice he knows when to take his shots. Like he doesn't take shots that are like low percentage shots or ill-advised shots at all. I mean, all of his shots are high percentage.
And, that, yeah. And along those lines, I tweeted this today, Kendall. In the three games he started, he's shooting like 76% from the field. Yeah. And that's largely a reflection of what you're talking about. He takes the right shots within the context of the offense.
Right. And his big thing when he was at Morgan Park and also his first couple of years at Illinois, he was one of the best finishers at the rim, one in college basketball and definitely here in high school basketball. His whole game is predicated off of getting to the rim. So now, I mean, that's second nature to him. But now you're starting to see him knock down threes with consistency and knock down big shots. And, you know, a couple times this year, he's even taken it off of the dribble, particularly against Bradley Beal. When Bradley Beal told him, hey, I'm just rip it through and take one dribble and go up and take the shot. Bradley Beal mentioned that after the game. Now he's starting to add that to his game. And, you know, it's, I mean, what a luxury to have. A guy who I believe should have been a lottery pick. You get him in the second round, and now he's starting to pay dividends already. I mean, that was a big win for the Bulls.
Ken, I got to ask you, with that Bradley Beal thing, have you ever seen anything like that in an NBA game, an all-star player giving in-game tips to
No. Looking... No, never, because I can tell you, Michael never gave me any tips. Joe Duke never gave me any tips except for politic the referees, you know, go up to them and say hello during the pregame warm-ups and things like that. So, but no, nothing to help your game, because you can use that against them, which Io did.
Not too long later, a few minutes later, but it's so true about the because I remember in summer league one of the standouts, especially watching in person, was all right. He was, you know, in terms of his drives, in terms of getting separation, in terms of finishing, it just didn't look like it was going to immediately translate in the way that he was going to be the type of player that he was at Illinois immediately. And then he came back and it started in training camp. It started in the preseason. Then it seems like it's been on a upward linear trajectory throughout the start of the season. He's just gotten progressively better in just about every area of his game. Defensively, the finishing, he now has this kind of like high arcing floater that he's getting over the top of like rim protecting bigs and things like that, that it didn't look like he was going to be able to do against NBA length and speed and things like that in summer league. It's been enormously impressive. I assume none of it surprised you, Kendall, but what do you think it is about him that has allowed him to improve at such a rapid rate? Because it's just been, you know, stuff that blows you away to be this far along this early in his NBA career.
Yeah, well, I think what impresses me most is his ability to humble himself and learn. You know, there's been all kind of about how he asked questions. And Casey, you were closer to the team than any of us, you know, being at the United Center, being closer to the team. But how Zach and DeMar said, man, this guy constantly asks questions. And when you do that, that means you're putting in your head how to play. And now your learning curve is so much smaller than everybody else's. And I think that that's the reason why he's gotten so good so fast. And also, too, you know, he's been able to get the minutes as well and get comfortable with the pro game. So, you know, everything was right with Io. Because I'm going to tell you guys, when he got drafted in the second round after I saw him play in the summer league, I was like, oh, well, he's going to spend some time in the G League. You know, then he's going to come up and, you know, they probably keep. I didn't think that. I thought that, yeah, he's a 10-year guy. Yeah, that's what I thought. But I thought he would have to start off in the G League, play himself into the league. But none of that has happened, man. He's taken off.
Kendall, it's funny you bring up his humility, because the day before his jersey ceremony at your beloved alma mater, I was asking him, we were at a group session at the Advocate Center, but I was asking him how long he knew you and when he first came across you. And he mentioned that his aunt lives near you or something like that.
His aunt lives right door to me.
Okay, well, there's that. And then I jokingly and innocently, because I knew the answer to this, I was like, hey, does Kendall Gill have his jersey retired at U of I? And he like was answered it real seriously. He didn't pick up on my sense of humor. And then I said, well, who's better, you or Kendall? And he kind of dodged that question too. So, I know what you would answer in that. You could take him. You could take him off the drill.
Oh yeah, I could. I mean, that's what I did, man.
but if his aunt lives next door to you, like, how long have you known him? How close are you guys? And you know, how
we're not real close. He's been to his aunt's house a couple of times, you know, where I've been there and I've come out and you know, and then, you know, I run into him and say hello and everything. But I did not know his aunt lived next door to me, because, you know, they never told me, you know, we were just friendly with each other and everything. And so this is how I found out. I'm outside cutting my grass, you know, edge and everything. And all of a sudden, I see this guy, 6'11", getting out of this car that parked right in front of my house. I'm like, who the hell is that? I mean, that guy is huge. So I bent my glass down. I was like, Danny? And I was like, what are you doing here? It was Danny Manny, right? So Danny Manny, like, you know, I'm recruiting Ayo. I was like, Ayo? I was like, he doesn't live here. He's like, yeah, his aunt lives here. We're meeting right here today. And that's how I found out that his aunt lived right next door to me.
That's a great story, man.
Yeah, so then the cat was out of the bag. Then they asked me to talk to Ayo a couple times, which I did. And actually, you know, I actually advised his dad to tell him to stay in school for another year. You know, I didn't think that he was ready coming out his sophomore year or anything like that. I thought he needed one more year, and it actually paid off for him. You know, because the thing is, I was gonna come out of school after my junior year too, after we went to the Final Four and everything. But my dad said, "No, you're not ready yet." He said, "Right now you'll be a mid to late first round pick. If you wait another year, then you could possibly be a lottery pick." And it was true. I went fifth in the draft. So, you know, waiting a year, some guys think it's not beneficial, but like in Io's case, look at what it had done for him. You know, his maturity, his ability to play, his body physically is ready, his mind is ready to play with grown men. And you know, way next year, I think helps everybody.
Kendall, you know, to that point, you know, we see the results of him staying the year now, right. But for some reason, you know, scouts and things like that, you know, they saw like otherwise for teams, thus him waiting until the second round. So how do you gauge, you know, coming out when you're ready physically and mentally to play at the pro level versus coming out when you know you can make the most money? Like if like, for example, if you were like, hey, I think you need another year to settle. But at that moment in time, he was like, I can make the most money right now. So how do you gauge that when you're talking to a young player or if you're a young player now?
Yeah, well, I have a rule. If you're not a top 10 pick, then you don't come out. Okay? And in Io's case, you know, his whole junior year, I was looking at the draft boards. I didn't see his name. I didn't see his name. His whole sophomore year, I didn't see his name in the first round. So, you know, I'm like, no, he's not on nobody's list. So, you know, he shouldn't come out at this time. You look at a kid, you know, the kid that went to Whitney Young and then he ended up at Duke. I forget his name, but he came out of school.
Okafor.
No, not Okafor. This
kid, Stewart.
Stewart came out of school, was on nobody's first round list, and actually wasn't even on the second round list, and still decided to come out. I don't even know where he is now. You know, talk about a kid that needed to stay in school another year or two. He should have done that. And, you know, like I said, you know, and that's always been my rule. If you're not a top 10 pick, don't even, and you're underclassmen, you're not on anybody's list, you don't come out. You got to wait another year.
And I'll tell you what, Tony, scouts might not have recognized the value that extra year had, but Billy Donovan did immediately. And I interviewed Brad Underwood for a story earlier season when Io was first descending, kind of cracking the rotation. And he even talked about how, you know, having that extra, I mean, really, he was talking about extra 2 years because the one and done culture is such a pervasive thing these days.
Yeah.
Was that Io entered the league from such an advanced perspective, running different defensive concepts, his screen navigation. Like, that was one thing he highlighted that was like, that's something we hammered home at Illinois that he's going to immediately come to the NBA level and be able to do. And look at how quickly he's adapted in that format. It's really helped him defensively. And then all the other stuff with Io, you know, just from his, you know, upbringing, just his mentality, it's been great to watch.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search.
match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
But let's kick it here. Let's show Kobe some love too, because he's the other half of this kind of refreshed, or I guess thrown together because of injury, starting backcourt that the Bulls have had the last couple games. While Io in this last three game stretch is averaging 18 points, 8 assists, 5.3 rebounds, and 2 steals on, like you said, KC, 77% shooting and 70% from 3. Just amazing. Kobe also 17 points, 4 assists against with just 1 turnover. 1.3 steals. He's shooting over 50% from 3. Kobe, after a really, really rocky start to this year with the shoulder, coming off of that, looking really out of rhythm, being sidelined with COVID. I think his percentages have climbed to the most efficient of his career. He's up near 40% from 3 now on good volume. I think he showed a lot of improvements as a driver, as a finisher, as a decision maker. Kendall, what have you thought of Kobe's development this season and where he kind of sits right now in terms of his importance with the Bulls backcourt, not whole?
Well, look, it started off kind of rocky because, you know, he's coming off of shoulder surgery and then he has to go into COVID protocol, so wasn't able to get a rhythm. But I think you just mentioned it. He is so much more improved on his drives that I think it's revolutionized his game, because now you just can't play him for the three-point shot. You know, that's what he did his first couple years in the league. But now he has that. He also has his drives to the basket. Now, next is adding the mid-range to his game. And I don't know if he can ever post up. You know, he doesn't have the body type to be able to post up and go over guys. But, you know, once you get those four things, you become a well-rounded offensive player where you can go, you have several different dimensions to your game. And, you know, now that he's added the drive to his game, I think it's made him extra, extra tough in order to stop, because you got to honor his three-point shot. So you saw him do that last night against Cleveland. You know, a whole bunch of times he faked like he was going to take the three, and then he just took off and drove the basketball inside, which was great. And, you know, I think that just adds to his value. You know, there's been a lot of speculation. We need another big man, and you know, is Miles available? Is Domantas Sabonis available? Well, you guys know if any of those guys are available, Kobe's going to have to be part of that package. You know, so and that's part of the business. But, you know, if we can find a way to get one of those guys and keep Kobe, you know, and keep Pat Will and all those guys, you know, maybe, you know, you get a Tristan Thompson or somebody like that. I don't know whether DeAndre Jordan has anything left. But, you know, I would take a flyer on those guys just to keep Kobe, because I think his value to this team is great, specifically when you don't have DeMar scoring, or if Zach is not scoring, one of those guys are out, they get hurt. You need somebody like Kobe, somebody that can fill it up, somebody that can get 30 for you.
Yep, and you're seeing that right now. And KC, you reported last week, I mean, before even all this Lonzo stuff happened, that the Bulls were not, you know, actively interested in moving Kobe by any means. And as crowded as the guard room is, it makes sense because of how well he's been playing. And like you said, we're seeing now the value that he has filling in for injured guys. As a sidebar here, and Casey, we talked about this a little bit offline, another guy that I have my eye on in that kind of buyout big department potentially, Serge Ibaka, if he gets moved by LA, because if they shed him and they trade him to a cap space team like OKC, I think they can clear like $30 or $40 million off their luxury tax bill. They literally might just give him away in his, you know, $9.7 million expiring. If he gets shuttled to a cap space team that then waives him and he's on the market floating around out there, and you could get him, like you said, KG, without giving up a premium asset, I'd be really interested in that too. That's purely speculative, but that's a guy that I've kind of had the corner of my eye on for the last few days or weeks. But it kind of brings us to an interesting discussion point, which is this trade deadline. It's only a couple weeks away, and, you know, there's been reports of Jeremy Grant. There's been linkage there, you know, that kind of top tier of guy, Harrison Barnes, the guys at the top of the market. those types of names, though, are going to cost you Coby White, Patrick Williams, is that Portland pick. Like, you're talking about the best assets that the Bulls have in their war chest right now. Casey, I don't want to frame this as if, you know, all these injuries would change the Bulls' big picture thinking at the deadline, but, you know, where do you see them as standing in relation to a lot of those names as we, you know, get a couple weeks away from there right now?
I mean, you know, my sense in talking to people around the league that I have is that, you know, the Bulls are in the mix. They're doing their due diligence. At the end of the day, you got to decide how much you're willing to pay. And is a guy like Jeremy Grant the guy to put you over the top or at least have you contend for a championship? I don't know the answer to that.
Hell no.
Yeah. I don't know the answer to that. Kendall Gill knows the answer to that. So, no, I would say I don't know the answer from – I don't know if management believes that he is, because that's my job is report what management's thinking. But let's riff off what Kendall just said. Why is Jeremy Grant not the final piece for the Bulls?
Because he is a small forward. He's not a power forward. We need a big guy. You know, we need a big guy to contend with the Joel Embiids, with the Giannis Antetokounmpos, with the Jared Allens. You see Cleveland's whole front line is 7 feet tall. You know, we need a guy that can deal with Julius Randle if we have to meet him in the playoffs. You know, we have Bam Adebayo. Jeremy Grant is a nice player. I'm not taking anything away from him. And he's turned himself into a scorer, but he's slight of build. He's really a slender guy. We need a guy that can chop some wood in there, man. We need a big guy. We need a guy with some attitude. I mean, when I think Jeremy Grant, I don't think like a guy like Daniel Tice. I would love to have him back. You know, we need somebody like that, man.
Mm-hmm. One of the Morris twins to foul somebody. You know?
Nah, I don't want that. Morris twins gonna foul out and cause some brawls or something, man. We need somebody.
What did you think of Rob's Ibaka idea? If he hits the buyout market.
Oh, I love Ibaka because he's got championship experience. He's got the nasty attitude to him. You know, he's gritty. You know, guys like that I love. You know, so you know I would love to get him in a buyout.
Yeah, the stat with Jeremy Grant. I'm a Jeremy Grant fan, and I've really kicked it around in my head whether he'd be worth, you know, the Bulls making that kind of quote unquote all in move. They play small. Maybe you could play him at the four. But the stat that has given me the most pause has been he's averaged over 5 rebounds a game in his career once. And he's been in the league for 8 years.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that gives me pause. And then in addition to that, you know, reports, I think it was from Bleacher Report, from Jake Fisher, Bleacher Report, that he not only wants to be a primary offensive option on the next team that he's on, but also, you know, wants that extension, that 4-year, $112 million extension kind of up front waiting for him whenever he gets to the next place. Those things give you pause too, just from tying up the books, from that being kind of the last move flexibility wise that you can reasonably make. It's a tough calculation.
Yeah. Yeah, and we kind of got a pecking order as offensively here in Chicago right now. You know, so I don't know where Jeremy Grant fits in. Like I said, I really like his talent, guys, but I just do not think he fits with the current players in the system that we have right now.
Yeah, I mean, I was teasing it, you know, before. Like, could it work? I mean, again, like he's slender. They're still having, you know, are going to run into issues when it's playoff time with those bigger guys that play big. You know, Vooch, he can do what he can, but I think we all know, you know, defensively what he does on the inside. He's not really a stopper per se. So,
right.
Like, adding, another guy that wants the ball, I don't think benefits the Bulls for the long term, especially considering what he – you know, what he's looking as soon as that report came out, I was like, well, the Bulls should be out. Then at that point, I don't think he's worth the resources that because Detroit, they're looking for significant things in return for Jeremy Grant as well. And I don't think they have those to pull that off because now you're gutting your team, you know, for, you know, no offense, but it's Jeremy Grant. And again, the rebounding thing is important, Rob, like that.
No,
that is extremely important for a team that is not big to finish defensive possessions with rebounding and crash the offensive boards. And I don't think getting Jeremy Grant in that aspect for the things that you need, I don't think it helps them long term.
The one thing Jeremy Grant is, though, he's a really, really, really athletic and strong wing defender. And the Bulls also need that, in my opinion, in addition to the size and the front court aspect. God, like, as much as Lonzo and Io and Caruso have proved very versatile, very switchable, I still think they need another option against the Kevin Durants, the Jason Tatums, the maybe even like a guy like Jimmy Butler, like those types of wings. It's just they're kind of the victim, and a lot of teams are of, with the expanded playoffs to include the play-in now, with a lot of teams in contention, there just aren't as many sellers in the market as there used to be. So the price of a guy like Jeremy Grant, who's not even, you know, has never made an all-star team, it's an all-star price for a guy like that, because there just aren't that many, you know, big names like that on the market. But it's a tough thing to consider, especially when you're talking about giving up a guy like Patrick Williams, a guy like Kobe White, who's shown so much. All right, welcome back in. Kendall Gill had to run. He's a man on the move, but we were very, very grateful for his about 30 minutes with us. Ton of good insight, ton of good times in there. Casey and Tony, let's wrap this up quickly with some injury bulletins. It seems like we need to have a segment on every podcast dedicated to this at this point in the season. But let's start with the positive first. Alex Caruso makes his return from, you know, I think we could say it's a return from COVID protocols, but really, as Billy's hit on, as Alex hit on when we were talking to him pregame, it's been 6 weeks on and off for him, first with the hamstring strain in the first week of December. Then, you know, the Bulls have that COVID pause where they didn't play for a week, comes back after two games or so, sprains his foot. Just as he's about to come back from the foot, enters protocols. So it's been a while since there's been a truly extended stretch of him being on the floor and doing Caruso things. We got back to that against Cleveland last night. As we're recording this, Casey, you wrote about it. What was it like drinking in the Alex Caruso experience live and in person again? Because I know I missed it.
Yeah, I mean, he just impacts the game. He makes you notice him. I mean, you know, he didn't shoot the ball well, but that's not what his game's about. And as he said, he took the right shots. He ran the right offense. He, you know, the offense flowed when he was out there. I think he was 2 for 8. Didn't have a steal, which is a little surprising given how accomplished he's been in that category throughout this season. But you know, DeMar DeRozan said it. I mean, he just makes the wings and their defense more aggressive, and the Bulls scored 24 points off turnovers with Caruso back. I don't think that's coincidence. And I'm not saying it's all Caruso. I mean, other guys played well. Kobe White had 4 steals. Io had 2 more. So I'm not giving all the team's credit to one player. I'm just saying he impacts your defense. There's no question about it. And as DeMar said, that's when the Bulls are at their best, when they're wreaking havoc at the defensive end and then converting that to offense. And Alex is a big part of that.
I love that answer from DeMar. And I think you asked that question, Casey, because you're right. Even without a steal, the Caruso effect was in effect.
Yeah.
And we've been talking, you know, for honestly weeks at this point about how much they miss the energy beyond the technical skill, the communication, just the energy of guys like Caruso, of Javonte Green, Lonzo, when he's been out, when he's flying around, Derek Jones Jr. when he's flying around. So to get one, you know, ingredient of that back was definitely big. Because, you know, in the first half, it was, you know, he's on the minutes restriction. His stints are a little bit off. You know, normally you'd probably expect him to be taking the lion's share responsibility on Darius Garland, but he was guarding a lot of bigger players, Kevin Love, for an extended stretch. I think he had 11 minutes in the first half, shot 0-4, and, you know, it was kind of muted, kind of subdued. And then in the third quarter, there was a sequence where I think it was hit a three, drew one of his patented offensive fouls, fighting through a screen on Jared Allen, got a layup at the other end, and then was defending Kevin Love in the post and pulled the chair out and forced to travel. And it was just Pete Caruso. And then he had a chase down block and a bunch of other winning plays late in the fourth quarter that you could say he doesn't show up on the stat sheet, but I think his plus 18, which was a game high, says a lot about that. Elsewhere on the injury front, we covered the Lonzo situation. Zach LaVine not traveling with the Bulls, still dealing with his knee soreness. He will not travel on the upcoming 3-game trip that makes stops in Milwaukee, Orlando, and Oklahoma City. He's just going to, you know, stay back in Chicago, get treatment, continue to rehab. He's been, you know, in the facility with the Bulls. He's not practicing. He's not full on-court speed or anything like that, at least as of last update, but it's moving in the right direction. His update from Billy was a lot more positive than the Lonzo one he gave, in the sense that Zach is progressing well, and he said feeling a lot better. So it looks like his window of availability will open for that Toronto game next Wednesday back in Chicago. Not saying by any means that he will be back for that game at this point. We don't know that yet. But that's when the window opens. Other than that, we're kind of in holding pattern on Javonte Green, Derek Jones Jr., Javonte is, I think, officially inside of his 2 to 4 week return window, but we haven't gotten a substantive update on him lately. Derek Jones Jr. still probably a couple weeks away. Tyler Cook is back, but was a DNP. So, you know, whether he cracks in against a smaller team, maybe than Cleveland or Milwaukee on Friday, whether he cracks in kind of in that small ball five role that he had played at earlier points in the season will be interesting to see. I think that's everybody. The injury report is so hard to sift through these days, but I think I hit everybody. Casey, Tony, anything to add before we get out of here?
I'm just glad that they don't have to worry about COVID protocol so much when playoff time comes. They got their outbreak out the way. So maybe they can take advantage of some teams in the playoffs, like, you know, Milwaukee or somebody that hasn't had a super duper outbreak yet.
Tony, I'm expecting 8 new variants by the time we get to the playoffs. So I'm not doing any victory laps on that front. But with that, we'll get out of here. Thanks for listening to the Bulls Talk podcast. Casey, enjoy your drive up Milwaukee to see your guy, Bobby Portis. And I know you always enjoy drinking in the true Buck superstar in person. But we thank you guys for listening. Thanks again to Kendall Gill, the great Kendall Gill, for joining us. And we will see you guys next week. We hope you enjoyed the Bulls Talk podcast. Find us on Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Subscribe if you like the show. Feel free to rate and review us. New episodes are ready every Tuesday and Friday morning.